another boy again. Not the same way I kissed Dan. I have to get back in, Dan said. Mom will be wondering. Good luck, I said. I hope wherever you end up, things are better. We kissed again, but it was a quick goodbye kiss. Dan walked back into the hospital while I stood there and watched. I know Dan thinks I'm lucky, that I've been untouched by everything that's happened, and I know I'm self-pitying to think otherwise. But sometimes I wonder if the big cannonball horror of knowing someone you love has died is all that much worse than the everyday attrition of life. Except I know it is, because Dan lost his sister, and I've lost no one. Not to death, at least. Not that I know. And Dan has the same attrition that I have, only his mother's been close to dying also. Honestly, I know how lucky I am. But my heart feels like breaking because he didn't ask me to the prom in May. I could always have had that. And now I never will. And I don't think I'll ever have anything nearly as wonderful to dream about. August 2nd. What a feast! Mom and Lisa baked bread, using the last of the yeast. Of course we couldn't have a regular mixed salad. It's amazing the things one misses. Who would have thought I'd be nostalgic for iceberg lettuce? But Mom took a can of string beans and a can of kidney beans and tossed them with olive oil and vinegar and declared it a two-bean salad. Our main course was spaghetti with meat sauce. Sure, the meat came out of a jar, but I don't remember the last time I had any kind of beef, except in my dreams. For a vegetable, we had mushrooms. Peter brought two bottles of wine, one white and one red, since he didn't know what we'd be having for dinner. Mom let Johnny and me have a glass of wine because, hey, the world is coming to an end, so why not? Mrs. Nesbitt made dessert. She baked meringue shells from powdered egg whites and filled them with chocolate pudding. We ate in the sunroom. We set up the metal folding table and covered it with a pretty tablecloth and carried in the dining room chairs from the living room. Mom lit candles and we had a fire going in the wood stove. Mom used to pride herself on her cooking. She was always trying out recipes. The way the world used to be, Mom would never have served jarred meat sauce or canned mushrooms. But she was so proud and excited by dinner tonight, and we made an equal fuss over Mrs. Nesbitt's dessert. Maybe it was the smell of fresh-baked bread, or maybe it was the wine, or maybe it was something as basic as having enough food, but we all had a great time. I'd wondered what it would be like having Peter and Dad together, but they handled things the way Mom and Lisa do, like they were old friends, and having dinner together was the most normal thing in the world. We all talked, we all joked, we all enjoyed ourselves. After dinner, Matt and I cleared off the table. Nobody wanted the evening to end, so we kept sitting around the table. I don't remember what we were talking about, but it couldn't have been anything too serious because we didn't talk seriously all evening long. Even Peter kept his dead stuff to himself. When Johnny asked, "Are we all going to die?" "Come on," Mom said. "My cooking isn't that bad." "No, I mean it," Johnny said. "Are we going to die?" Mom and Dad exchanged looks. "Not in the immediate future," Matt said. "We have food and fuel. We'll be okay." "But what happens when the food runs out?" Johnny asked. "Excuse me," Lisa said. "I don't like to discuss this." She got up and left the room. Dad looked torn. Finally, he got up and went after her. So we were back to us. The us I've gotten used to the past couple of months. "John, you're entitled to an honest answer," Peter said. "But we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the government will get more food to us. There have to be supplies somewhere. All we can do is go day to day and hope for the best."
"I won't survive all this, I know," Mrs. Nesbitt said. "But I'm an old woman, Johnny."
"You're a young boy, and a strong, healthy one." "But what if things get worse?" I asked. I still don't know why, but maybe it was because Johnny'd just been told he'd live, and nobody was bothering to tell me that. "What if the volcanoes aren't the last bad thing to happen? What if the Earth survives, but humans don't? That could happen, couldn't it? And not a million years from now, either. That could happen now, or next year, or 5 years from now. What happens then?"
"When I was a kid, I was fascinated by dinosaurs," Peter said. "The way kids are. I read everything I could about them. Learned all the Latin names, could recognize one just from a skeleton. I couldn't get over how those amazing animals could just disappear. But, of course, they didn't disappear. They evolved into birds. Life may not continue the way we know it today, but it will continue. Life endures. I'll always believe that. Insects survive everything, Matt said. They'll survive this, too. Great, I said. Cockroaches are going to evolve. Mosquitoes are going to be the size of eagles. Maybe butterflies will grow, Matt said. Picture butterflies with foot-long wingspans, Miranda. Picture the world blazing with the color of butterflies. My money is on the mosquitoes, Mrs. Nesbitt said, and we were so startled by her cynicism that we burst into laughter. We laughed so loud, Horton woke up with a start and leaped off Johnny's lap, which made us laugh even louder. Dad came back down then, but Lisa never did. August 3rd. Dad and Matt worked all day. When Dad came in for supper, he told us he and Lisa would be leaving first thing tomorrow morning. I knew I shouldn't be surprised, but it still hurt to hear it. Lisa pretty much stuck to bed today. Mom went in there a couple of times to make sure she was okay, but it didn't seem to make a difference. She's worried about her parents, Mom said to me, and of course she's worried about the baby. She wants to be settled in as soon as possible, and the longer they wait, the harder it may be to travel. I wonder if Lisa would be in such a hurry to go if Johnny hadn't asked about the world ending. Dad made tuna fish sandwiches for himself and Lisa and took hers up to their room. For a long time, I thought he might stay there and then leave early tomorrow morning and I wouldn't have a chance to see him again. But after an hour or so, he joined us in the sunroom. How about sitting on the porch with me, Miranda? He said. Sure, I said, and the two of us walked out together. I haven't had much of a chance to talk with you, Dad said after we sat down on the porch swing. I've spent a lot of time with Matt and Johnny, but not much with you. That's okay, I said. Cutting the wood was the important thing. You and your brothers are the important thing, Dad said. Miranda, I want you to know how proud of you I am. Proud of me? I asked. Why? For a million reasons, Dad said. For being smart and funny and beautiful. For finding swimming when skating didn't work out. For all the things you're doing to make your mother's life easier. For not complaining when you have so much to complain about. For being a daughter any father would be proud of. I knew asking you to be the baby's godmother was the right thing. And the past few days, I've realized just how right it is. I'm so glad I'm your father. I love you so much. I love you too, I said. And the baby is going to be all right. Everything will be. I just know it. I know it too, Dad said, and we hugged. We sat there quietly for a while, because we both knew anything we said would spoil the mood. Then Dad got up and went back to Lisa. I sat on the porch a little while longer and thought about babies and butterflies and what the rest of my life was going to be like. When I thought every thought I possibly could think, I went back inside and listened for a while to the silence. August 4th. Dad and Lisa left at 6 this morning. We all got up when they did, and we had breakfast together. Mom found a jar of strawberry jam and used the last of the bread. We had canned peaches and powdered orange drink mix. Dad and Mom had coffee. Lisa had tea. Dad hugged all of us and kissed us all goodbye. It took all my willpower not to cling to him. We all know we may never see each other again. Dad promised he'd write every chance he got, and he'd make sure to let us know how Grandma is. When they got in the car, Lisa did the driving. I think that's because Dad was crying so hard, he knew he couldn't drive. Chapter 9. August 6th. I woke up this morning thinking, I'll never see Sammy again. I'll never see Dan again. I'm so scared I'll never see Dad again. I don't know how I'll survive if I never see sunlight again. August 7th. I went into Matt's room before supper to see if he had any library books to return tomorrow. Matt walked in as I was looking. What the hell are you doing in my room? He shouted. I was so startled, I just stood there. I've been chopping wood all day, he said. I'm tired, and I'm filthy and hungry, and I have to be with Johnny every damn minute, and I swear I could kill Dad for not staying here to take care of us. I'm sorry, I stammered. Well, so am I, he said. Fat lot of good that does. August 9th. We are all in a funk. You would think knowing we actually have food in the house would cheer us up, but nothing seems to. I've noticed that Mom's skipping breakfast again, and for the past couple of days, I haven't seen her eat lunch either. Matt's been chopping wood all day long, so I guess he's not eating any lunch. He hasn't been real chatty lately. Nobody's telling me what to do, but I guess I'd better go back to brunch also. It scares me that Mom is eating less when we do have food in the house. It must mean she doesn't think the stuff Dad brought, and what we still had before he came, is going to last long enough. You've got to think something in this world would get back to normal. I don't remember the last time we had electricity, not even for a few minutes in the middle of the night. Mom makes sure at least one of us goes into town every day to see if there's any news at the post office. It's become the community bulletin board. Or if there's a food giveaway. But we all come home empty-handed. It's getting colder, too. The temperature today never even hit 60. August 11th. First frost. Just a light one, but nonetheless. Why are we staying here? Johnny asked me this morning. Everybody else is moving down south. Everybody else isn't moving, I said, mostly because I was flustered by the question. Johnny's never been much of a talker, but since he came home from camp, he's been even quieter than usual. It's like this whole business has made him old before he ever had a chance to be a teenager. Half the kids at camp said their families were planning to move, Johnny said, and camp was less than half full. I ran into Aaron in town yesterday, and he said so many kids from school had already left, they're talking about closing down some of the schools. Aaron isn't exactly a reliable witness, I said. His father is on the school board, Johnny said. Okay, I said. So he is a reliable witness. But we're not going anywhere, and you'd better not talk to Mom about it. Do you think we should go? Johnny asked. It felt so strange, because he sounded like I do when I ask Matt stuff like that. We can't leave, Mrs. Nesbitt, I said. And to get in our car and drive someplace, without knowing where we'd end up, or if there'd be food there and a place to live? Some people can do that. I don't think Mom can. Maybe one of us should go, Johnny said. Matt or me. You could stay here with Mom and Mrs. Nesbitt. You're not old enough, I said, so stop thinking about it. We'll be okay. We have food, we have wood, we even have some oil for the furnace. Things are bound to get better. They can't get worse. Johnny grinned. That's what they all say, he pointed out. And they've all been wrong. August 14th. At supper tonight, canned chicken and mixed vegetables, Johnny said, I know my birthday is coming, but I don't expect any presents, so don't worry about it. I had totally forgotten about Johnny's birthday. When I list all the things I miss, I need to include shopping. Mom said that was very mature of Johnny, and she had to admit she didn't have anything for his birthday, but that didn't mean it wasn't going to be a special day. Which I guess means an extra vegetable at supper, or maybe some canned fruit salad for dessert. Or maybe we'll drink that other bottle of wine Peter brought, and I'll get drunk. It kind of annoys me that Johnny's making these big grown-up gestures and I'm not. I can't exactly say don't worry about my birthday, since it's in March, and I think we'll have lots of other stuff to worry about between now and then. I'm back to 2 meals a day, but that's not exactly a big grown-up gesture around here. Also, even though none of us is saying it, we're all worried because there's been no word from Dad. The mail is so weird. Letters can take weeks to arrive, and probably a lot of mail doesn't make it through at all. There's no reason to think we'd have heard anything by now, but it's scary to think of him and Lisa driving into the void. Mom listens to the radio every morning, and I'm pretty sure if the rest of the United States had evaporated or something, she'd mention it. So Dad and Lisa are probably safe wherever they are. Still, we'd all like to hear. August 15th. I asked Mom if things were better than they had been. Had all the bad stuff, the floods and the earthquakes and the volcanoes stopped? She said no. that once the moon's gravitational pull had changed, things could never go back to where they'd been. "But things aren't any worse," I said. Mom obviously didn't feel like answering that. "How much worse can they get?" I asked. Mom explained that there were volcanoes erupting in all kinds of unexpected places, like Montreal. It seems there's a volcano there that had never erupted because the Earth's crust had been too thick. But now that the moon's pull is so much stronger, the lava was able to break through the crust. The volcanoes cause fires, and the earthquakes cause fires, and the tsunamis get bigger and bigger, so there's less and less coastline, and people are fleeing places with volcanoes and earthquakes and floods, so things are getting worse, even in the stable places. And, of course, there are epidemics. Once Mom got started, there was no stopping her. We've already had 3 nights with frost, but New England and the upper Midwest have already had weeks of killing frost. All the crops there have died. Oh, and there was an earthquake right by a nuclear power plant, and it exploded or something. I think that was California. "Now do you see how lucky we are?" she demanded. "I never said we weren't," I yelled. "Because I hadn't. Or at least I hadn't today. All I did was ask if things were getting better, which isn't exactly the same as saying I wish we had electricity and hot chocolate and television and a prom with an actual date to look forward to. All of which I think about every morning when I wake up, and every night before I fall asleep." "Don't use that tone with me," Mom shouted. "What tone?" I shouted right back. "You're the one who's using a tone. How come you can yell at me and I have to just take it?" We really went at it, which we haven't done in weeks, not since that whole horrible business with Horton. How ungrateful I am, how I just sit around and do nothing, how self-pitying I am. "You're damn right I'm self-pitying," I shouted right back at her. "Why shouldn't I be? It's bad enough my life is like this and I have no idea if I'm going to survive. I'm stuck with a mother who doesn't love me. I should have gone with Dad and Lisa. He loves me, even if you don't." "Go," Mom said. "Just get out. I don't want to look at you." I was so stunned it took me a moment to run out of the house. But once I did, I had no idea where to go or what to do. I got on my bike and let my legs tell me where to go. And much to my surprise, although I guess not to my legs' surprise, I ended up at Megan's. Megan's mom looked about 10 years older than she had when I saw her last month. But she smiled when she saw me, like it was the most normal thing for me to be popping in for a visit. At least she didn't remind me of Becky's mom anymore. "Megan's in her room," she said. "She'll be glad to see you." I went up to Megan's room. For a moment, I wondered what the hell I was doing there. But I knocked on her door and told her it was me and went on in. Megan was lying on her bed reading the Bible. It was scary seeing how thin she'd gotten. But she didn't look crazy or anything, and these days, you take what you can get. "Miranda," she squealed, and for a moment she was my Megan. "I'm so happy you're here. Sit down, tell me everything." So I did. Every single thing. Mom, and the fights, and Johnny, and Matt, and Dad, and Lisa, and Horton, and how Dan was going to ask me to the prom, only now he's gone. I must have talked nonstop for half an hour, with Megan interrupting me only to ask a question or make some kind of sympathetic noise. "Boy," she said when I finally finished, "your life is terrible." I didn't know whether to burst into tears or laughter. Laughter won. "I'm having one of those, except for that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play moments?" I said. "Everyone is," Megan said. "Even you?" I asked. Megan nodded. "I know what I need to do," she said, "and I'm doing it as best I can. But even though I know it's God's will and I can't question, I want to know Mom's soul is saved, and Dad's, and yours and everyone else's I've ever loved. I pray and I pray, but I don't think it's making any difference. We're all in hell, Miranda. God knows what's best for us, but it's still hell." "Does Reverend Marshall think that way?" I asked. I was pretty shocked to hear Megan talk like that. "He says God is punishing us for our sins," she said. "We are all sinners. I know how sinful I am. I covet things, Miranda. Food. I covet food so much sometimes. And I have lustful thoughts." "Don't look so shocked. I'm 16. You think I never had a lustful thought?" "Who for?" I asked. Megan laughed. Tim Jenkins, she said, and James Bell, and Mr. Martin. We all had crushes on Mr. Martin, I said. Half the girls at Howell High are going to hell if having a crush on Mr. Martin is a sin. But Tim Jenkins? I didn't think he was your type. He's kind of wild, Megan. I know, she said. I used to think if he loved me, I could get him to reform. But that wasn't how I lusted after him, if you know what I mean. I didn't lust after him just so I could save his soul. And Reverend Marshall thinks all the horrible stuff has happened because you lusted after Tim Jenkins, I asked. That's kind of simplistic, Megan said. My point was that I'm as much a sinner as anybody else, and I've hardly had a chance to do anything. I might have lustful thoughts, but Sammy's actually done something with hers. And if God is angry with me, then he's angry at her too, and pretty much everybody else on earth. We really have made a giant mess of things. Speak for yourself, I grumbled, and we both laughed. I can't believe the moon came crashing in because I want to go to the prom with Dan, I said. What's the point of God making us human if he doesn't want us to act like we're human? To see if we can rise above our natures, Megan said. Eve got Adam to eat the apple, and that was the end of the Garden of Eden. It all comes back to food, doesn't it? I said, and we laughed again. I can't tell you how it felt to be laughing with Megan. I know she's crazy to be flinging herself into death when so many people are dying you practically have to take a number and wait your turn. And she looked like a talking skeleton. But she was still Megan. For the first time since all this happened, I felt like I'd gotten something back. I think I'll go home, I said. I don't have any place else to go. Megan nodded. Miranda, she said, and she took one of those long pauses I've come to expect from people. Miranda, I don't know if we're ever going to see each other again. Of course we will, I said. Or are you and your mother planning on leaving? I think she'll go after I die, Megan said. But we're staying until then. In that case, I'm sure I'll see you again, I said. Megan shook her head. Don't come back, she said. I have to show God I'm truly repentant, and I can't do that if you make me think about Tim Jenkins and food and how awful things are now. I don't want to be angry at God, and seeing you makes me feel that way, just a little bit. So, I can't see you again. I have to sacrifice our friendship, because I don't have much left I can sacrifice to prove to God how much I love him. I hate your God, I said. Find your own then, she said. Go, Miranda, please. And if you ever hear from Sammy, tell her I prayed for her every day, just like I pray for you. I will, I said. Goodbye, Megan. And then the worst thing happened. She'd been propped up on her bed for the whole time I'd been there, but when I got ready to go, she struggled to get off the bed, and I could see she barely had the strength to stand. She had to support herself as we hugged and kissed, and then she fell back onto the bed. I'm fine, she said. Go, Miranda. I love you. I love you too, I said. And I ran away from her house, without even saying goodbye to her mother. I got back on my bike and rode straight home. I probably burned off 3 days' worth of calories I rode so fast. I put the bike in the garage and raced into the house. Mom was sitting in the kitchen sobbing. Mom! I cried, and I flung myself into her arms. She hugged me so hard I could barely breathe. Oh, Miranda! Miranda! She kept crying. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, too, I said, and I was. Not for anything I'd said earlier. I was sorry because I make Mom worry, and there's nothing I can do to keep her from worrying. I love her so much. In a world where there's so little good, she's good. Sometimes I forget that or resent it, but she is good, and she loves me, and every thought she has is to protect Matt and Johnny and me. If God's looking for sacrifices, all he has to do is look at Mom. August 18th. Johnny's birthday. Matt took the afternoon off and we played baseball. We took turns catching, pitching, fielding, and hitting. Mom hit a ball so long, it took Matt 5 minutes to find it. Then we went to Mrs. Nesbitt's for dinner. I have to admit that was a nice change, eating around someone else's kitchen table. She made quite the meal for us. We started with fruit salad, and then we had tuna noodle casserole and peas. For dessert, she'd made oatmeal raisin cookies that Johnny's always loved. I could tell Mom was concerned because all that good oatmeal was going to cookies, but she had two anyway. The rest of us pigged out. I know I ate at least 4 cookies, which probably guarantees me a first-class ticket to hell for gluttony. But Mrs. Nesbit beamed while we were eating. She must have been planning those cookies for weeks now, and she pulled off the surprise. Johnny said he wanted to make a speech, so we cheered him on. He actually stood up, and I guess he'd been working on what he wanted to say, because it was pretty close to perfect. He said he knew times were tough now, and we didn't know if the future was going to get any better. But the important thing was, we had each other, and as long as we stuck together, we could make it through. He even said he loved us. Mom was crying, but they were happy tears. I know, because I shed a few myself. It's funny. I remember my birthday so vividly, the fights Mom and I had because I wanted a big boy-girl party, and Mom wanted something simpler and easier. I yelled, "Trust!" at her, and she yelled, "Temptation!" right back at me. We started fighting over it the day after her birthday, and I don't think we stopped until the day before mine. 4 weeks of fighting over what kind of party I could have. In the end, it was perfectly fine. Boys and girls, pizza, cake, no beer, and a certain amount of unsupervised making out. It's hard to believe I was ever that young. I guess Johnny never will be. Chapter 10. August 22nd. Mom went to the post office today, still no word from Dad. And at supper, she told us that there was a notice for a big meeting for all concerned at the high school on Friday. Announcements about the school year. Usually by this point in August, there's a shift in weather to remind you that the good times are about to end. A little chill in the evening, the days aren't quite as long. Just a sense that in a couple of weeks, it's going to be school time again. But lately, all the days have been the same. Cool and gray and dry. Sometimes it's muggy, but it never rains. And the sun doesn't shine, so it's hard to tell if the days are getting any shorter. I hadn't been thinking about school. But now that I am, I realized I'm looking forward to it. It won't be school like I remember. It'll probably be worse than it was in June, and that was pretty bad. But at least it'll be something to do. People to see. And I may not like tests and homework. Who does? But at least you can pretend it's for a purpose. School is all about what's going to happen. A test on Friday, report cards at the end of the month, graduation in 2 years. We don't talk about the future anymore. Not even what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like we'll jinx tomorrow if we even mention it. No matter how bad school might be, it's still good. I'll go to the meeting with Mom on Friday to see what's being planned. August 26th. I write stuff down in here, and I don't read it. Things are bad enough without having to remind myself of just how bad things are. But I just read what I wrote a couple of days ago, all about how wonderful school is and all that crap. Tests, woo-hoo. Report cards, woo-hoo. The future? Biggest woo-hoo of them all. Mom and Johnny and I all went to the meeting this evening. Matt liked the idea of a little quiet time, so he stayed home. The high school auditorium was full, which I would have thought was a good sign, but it was full of parents and kids, and the kids were all ages. It could have been full with every parent and kid left in the school district, for all I know. The president of the school board, who turned out to be Aaron's father, Johnny was pretty excited about that, and the other members of the board who were still in town, and a couple of principals stood on the stage. Aaron's father did the talking. The unconfirmed numbers indicate that half the school-aged children in the district won't be returning to school here, he said. And a somewhat higher percentage of teachers, principals, and staff have indicated they won't be returning. It's funny. I go into town at least twice a week, and while I've certainly noticed fewer people on the streets, I haven't given it much thought. All the stores are closed. One gas station is open on Tuesdays. But I've been assuming the reason I'm not seeing people is because there's nothing to do if they do come into town. I hadn't realized it was because people were moving out. Or too sick to get to town. Or dying. Our resources are limited, Aaron's father said. The governor contacted all the heads of school boards in Pennsylvania last week and told us to expect no help from the state. Every district is on its own. We are certainly in no worse shape than other districts, but that's not saying very much.
It was quiet then. Even the little kids who were crying shushed.
The board, what remains of the board, has been trying to figure out how to handle our circumstances, Aaron's father said. These decisions haven't been made quickly or easily. We have children here, too.
I thought he was going to say that there wasn't going to be school, but he didn't. At least not exactly.
We think the best use of our resources, at least for the time being, is to keep two schools open, he said. The high school and Maple Hill Elementary. Parents should send their children to whichever school is closer to their home. We'll start school on August 31st.
What about buses? One parent called out.
No bus service, Aaron's father said. Not for the foreseeable future.
I live 6 miles away from the high school, another parent said, and Maple Hill's got to be 10 miles away. I have two elementary school kids. How are they supposed to get to school?
You'll have to make your own arrangements, Aaron's father said. Perhaps you could carpool with neighbors.
A lot of people laughed at that. What about food? Another parent yelled. My kids are hungry. I've been counting on school lunches.
We can't supply lunches, Aaron's father said. Give your children a large, nourishing breakfast and feed them again when they get home from school.
You want to tell us where that large, nourishing breakfast is going to come from? A woman yelled.
Aaron's father ignored her and all the other people who were starting to make noise. Naturally, the schools don't have electricity, he said. We ask every parent to give their child a flashlight to take to school. We'll try to make the best use of natural light, but as we all know, lately that's been hard to come by. We're going to start with a 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. school day, but we'll probably change that as the days get shorter.
What about heat? Someone yelled.
I have to give Aaron's father credit. I'd have been running out of there by then, but he just took it.
The schools are heated by natural gas, he said. I spoke to a vice president of the company last week. He was unable to assure me that there'd be any natural gas going through the pipelines much past September.
Wait a second, a man yelled. Is that just for the schools or for everybody?
Everybody, Aaron's father said. Believe me, I questioned him carefully about that. The man I spoke to said the best case estimate right now is for the gas supplies to end by early October.
Even for the hospital? Someone asked.
They have electricity. Will they have heat too?
I can't speak for the hospital, Aaron's father said. Perhaps they have some electrical heating system.
The schools don't.
We're dependent on natural gas, and we need to assume that we won't have any by October.
So you want my kids to walk 10 miles to starve and freeze at school? A woman yelled. Is that what you're telling us?
Aaron's father just plowed on. In case there's any uncertainty about this, there'll be no after-school activities, he said. And many of the high school classes can no longer be offered. We're going to try to divide the teachers as evenly as possible between the two schools, and we think there'll be enough teachers, but no one should assume that a certain teacher or subject will be available. No more science labs or gym. We are fortunate that Mrs. Underhill, the school nurse, is still working with us. She'll divide her days between the two schools. She's requested that if a child complains of any discomfort, that child not be sent to school. We have no way of contacting parents if a child needs to be sent home. And naturally, we are concerned that an infected child could make classmates sick as well.
How do we know Mrs. Underhill is going to stay on? A man shouted. Or any of the teachers? What if they decide to get the hell out of here?
That might happen, Aaron's father said. None of us can be certain what next month is going to be like, or the month after that, or after that. We're trying to do the best we can, and it's our opinion that even a little bit of school is better than none. If you think your children would be better off being homeschooled, simply go to one of the two schools and sign up for the grade appropriate textbooks.
He stood there for a long, brave moment and then said,
Any other questions?
It turned out there were. Lots of them, but they mostly had to do with natural gas. I guess this was the first people had heard that the supply was going to run out. It wasn't until I got home that I realized we use natural gas for the stove and the water heater. I asked Mom about that, and she said we'd cook our food and heat our water on the wood stove, so we'd be okay. She says she doesn't know what people who don't have wood stoves are going to do, but she guesses they'll move out, try down south or something. Although she heard on the radio this morning that North Carolina has already had a frost, so she isn't sure things are going to be much better anyplace else. No one's crops are doing well because there's been no sunlight anywhere for over a month, or rain for that matter. So, we're all going to freeze and starve no matter where we live. She didn't exactly put it that way. Actually, she said we'd be fine because we had heat and food and each other. She also told Johnny and me to think about school. If we want to give it a try, that's fine by her. If we want to stay home, she and Matt would teach us, and that would also be fine. We shouldn't worry if one of us wanted school and the other wanted to stay home. We should each decide what we wanted for ourselves, and she would go along with the decision. I think I'm going to give school a try. It's going to be so weird. School without Megan and Sammy and Dan and most of the other kids I know. But if I'm not used to weird by now, I don't know when I will be. August 27th. Mom says we're about equidistant from Maple Hill and the high school, and she doesn't think anyone will care which school we pick. But if we do decide to go to school, she'd prefer it if Johnny and I went to the same one. I talked to Johnny about it this afternoon. He said he wasn't that crazy about going to school, but if he did, he'd rather go to Maple Hill. I guess it's because it's familiar to him. Of course, I'd rather go to the high school. Maple Hill is a real baby school, K through 3. I don't even know if I'd fit in the desks. Which is pretty funny, because Johnny's taller than I am. August 28th. An all bad day. First of all, my watch stopped. I guess it needs a new battery, only it isn't like I can get a lift to the mall and have a new one put in. The clock in my bedroom is electric, so that hasn't run for weeks now. It used to be I could look out the window and get some sense of what time it was. Oh, not if it was 2 a.m. rather than 3 a.m., but dawn looked different than midnight. Only with the sky gray all the time, dawn's harder to recognize. You can sort of see the sky is lighter, but there's nothing like a sunrise anymore. So now when I'm in bed, I have no idea what time it is. I don't know why that should be important to me, but it is. When I finally did get out of bed this morning, Mom looked super grim. We had a choice of bad news. First of all, there was a killing frost last night. Leaves are already starting to fall off the trees, and now any plants that were outside have died. It feels like late October, and we all know if it's like this in August, it's going to be hell this winter. Mom had brought in what she could of the vegetables she planted last spring, but of course nothing had done very well. Tiny tomatoes, tinier zucchini. We were glad for them, and sautéed in olive oil, they were a real treat. But her dreams of canning pints and pints of vegetables vanished. And I know she's worried about our food supply in a couple of months' time. We spent today digging out all the root vegetables, the potatoes and carrots and turnips she'd planted. They all looked smaller than normal, too, but at least they're something, and we can eat them for a few days and save on the canned food. Then, when Mom was through telling us about killer frosts, she said the past 2 days when she'd turned on the radio, she hadn't gotten any signal. We have 3 radios with batteries, and she'd tried all of them. We all tried all of them, because nobody wanted to believe her. But of course she was telling the truth. All any of us got was static. I haven't been listening to the news for months now. I haven't wanted to know any more than I have to. But I know Mom listens every morning for a few minutes, and she tells us what we need to know. Now we won't know what we need to know. I guess the radio stations ran out of electricity. Matt says even if the most powerful stations had their own generators, those generators have limited capacity. But without hearing what's going on in the real world, it's easy to think there is no real world anymore, that Howell, PA is the only place left on Earth. What if there is no more New York, or Washington, or L.A.? I can't even imagine a London or Paris or Moscow anymore. How will we know? I don't even know what time it is anymore. August 29th. Something scary happened today, and I don't know if I should tell Mom or Matt. I volunteered to do the bike run into town today. I wanted to get the feel of biking to the high school, in case Johnny and I end up there. Maple Hill we'd do back routes, but it makes more sense to bike through town to get to the high school. Also, I had some library books to return. I don't know what we'll do when the library closes. It's open 2 days a week, Monday and Friday, same as the post office. I bundled up. Temperature was 42 degrees, and the way the air tastes and how dark it is all the time makes you feel even colder. Loaded the bike, and started toward town. I was pedaling downhill on Main Street when I felt like something was different. It took me a moment to figure out what it was, and then I realized I could hear people laughing. Nowadays, because nobody is driving anymore, sound really carries. Only there isn't much sound to hear. There's always a crowd at the post office, and sometimes there are people at the library, but that's pretty much it for town. I guess the hospital is busy and noisy, but I haven't been there in a while. So, even though you could hear noise, there usually isn't any noise to hear. I didn't like the way the laughter sounded. It was scary hearing it, and I slowed my bike down and kind of hid in a place where I could look down the couple of blocks and see what was going on. There were 5 guys on Main Street. I recognized 2 of them. Evan Smothers, who's a year ahead of me in school, and Ryan Miller. He was on Matt's hockey team. The other guys looked to be about the same age, maybe a little older. Ryan and one other guy were holding guns. Not that there was anyone there for them to shoot. The street was empty except for the 5 of them. 2 of the guys were removing the plywood off storefronts. Then, one of them would break the pane glass and go into the store. All the stores in town are empty. There isn't much to take out of any of them, so I don't know why they even bothered. It was the plywood they seemed most interested in. They'd remove sheets of it and put it into a pickup truck. I stood there watching for 5 minutes or so. Now that I don't have a watch, time is a guess on my part. No one tried to stop them. No one even showed up on the street. For all I know, I was the only person who saw what they were doing. Then I remembered if I backed up a block or two, I could take the back route to the police station. I don't think I've ever been so scared in my life. The gang didn't seem to realize I was there, but if they did, they could have shot me. Maybe they wouldn't have. Maybe they just would have laughed at me. There was no way of knowing. But it made me so mad to see them destroying the stores and stealing the plywood and having a truck that must have had gas. I thought about Sammy and the guy she went off with and how gangs like this must be all over the place, taking things from people who need them and selling the things to people who could pay, however they pay. So I got more angry than scared and backed up the hill very quietly and biked around to the police station. I had no way of knowing if the cops could get to Main Street in time, but at least I could identify 2 of the guys. Only when I got to the police station, it was closed. The doors were locked. I banged hard against them. I didn't want to yell because I was only a couple of blocks away from where the gang had been taking down the plywood, and I was scared they'd realize I was there. I peeked into the window. Of course, things were dark, but I couldn't see anybody. It isn't like Howell has a big police department. We never needed one. But I figured someone was there all the time. I guess I was wrong. I tried to figure out where else I could go. My first thought was the firehouse, but then I remembered that the last time Peter came over, he said that people were setting fires in their houses to keep warm, and then the houses caught fire, and the firehouse had been closed, and they were seeing a lot of burn cases in the hospital. We should be careful with fire. It was a very Peter speech. At least he stopped saying we should be careful with mosquitoes, because they vanished when the frost started. Thinking about Peter made me think about the hospital. At least there'd be people there. I biked around an extra 30 miles or so to avoid going straight through town, and went to the hospital. Things really were different there from the last time. There were 2 armed guards standing in front of the main entrance, and another 2 by the emergency door. There must have been 20 people standing by the emergency door. I went to the main door.
"No visitors allowed," one of the guards said. "If you have a medical emergency, go to the emergency door and wait for a nurse to admit you."
"I need to talk to a police officer," I said. "I went to the police station and there was nobody there."
"We can't help you," the guard said. "We're privately hired. We have nothing to do with the police department."
"Why are you here?" I asked. "Where are the police?"
"We're here to make sure no one enters the hospital who isn't in need of medical care,"
the guard said.
We keep out people who want to steal food and supplies and drugs. I can't tell you where the police are.
They've probably moved out, the second guard said. I know a couple of them took their families and started south about a month ago.
Why do you need the police? Has anyone attacked you?
I shook my head.
Well, it's not wise for a girl your age to be out by herself, the guard said. I won't let my daughters or my wife go outside anymore unless I'm with them.
The other guard nodded.
Times like these, you can't be too careful, he said. No place is safe for a woman anymore.
Thank you, I said, although I have no idea what I was thanking them for. I guess I'll go home now.
Do that, the guard said, and stay home. Tell your parents they need to be more careful with their children. One day a girl like you might go out for a bike ride and never come home.
I shivered the entire ride home. Every shadow, every unexpected noise made me jump. I won't go to the high school. The only way of getting there is through town. But the only way of getting to Maple Hill is by back routes. And anyone could be there as well. It isn't like I can count on Johnny to protect me. When I got in, Mom didn't notice that the library books were the same ones I'd taken with me. She asked if there were any letters from Dad. And I lied and said there weren't. It probably isn't a lie, but I felt bad saying it just the same. I don't know what to do. August 30th. At supper tonight, Mom asked Johnny and me what we'd decided to do.
I don't think I'll go to school, Johnny said. It isn't like anybody else is going to.
You do realize you'll have to study here, Mom said. You can't just sit around and do nothing.
I know, Johnny said. I'll work hard.
What about you, Miranda? Mom asked. I immediately burst out sobbing.
Oh, Miranda, Mom said in her not-again voice.
I ran out of the kitchen and flew upstairs to my room. Even I knew I was acting like a 12-year-old. After a few minutes, Matt knocked on my door, and I told him to come in.
You okay? He asked.
I blew my nose and nodded.
Anything bothering you in particular? He asked, and the question was so ridiculous, I began to laugh hysterically.
I thought Matt was going to slap me, but then he started laughing right along with me. It took both of us a few minutes to calm down, but finally we did, and I told him about what had happened in town.
Everything.
I told him who the guys were, and how the police station was closed, and what the guards had said at the hospital.
You didn't tell Mom any of this? He asked.
Why not?
She has enough to worry about, I said.
Matt was silent. The guards are probably right, he said after a little bit. You and Mom shouldn't go out alone anymore.
I guess it's safe going to Mrs. Nesbitt's, but no farther.
So we're prisoners, I said.
Miranda, we are all prisoners, Matt said. Do you think I want to be living like this? I can't go back to Cornell. I don't know if there is a Cornell anymore, but even if there is, I can't drive there, and I can't bike there, and I can't hitch a ride there. I'm stuck, too. I don't like it any more than you do.
I never know what to say when Matt admits he's unhappy, so I kept quiet.
You're right about high school, he said. It's not a good idea to go to town anymore.
I'll go to the post office and library from now on. But if you want to go to Maple Hill, I'll go with you in the morning and pick you up in the afternoon.
I thought about it. It isn't like I was all that excited about going to school.
On the other hand, it makes me mad to think of being forced to stay home. I may never leave Howell again.
I'd like to at least be able to leave my house.
Okay, I said. I'll try Maple Hill. But don't tell Mom what happened. I don't want her to worry any more than she has to.
Matt nodded. I guess tomorrow is my first day of school. Woo-hoo.
Fall. Chapter 11. August 31st. When Matt and I got to school this morning, I saw kids divided into three groups waiting to get in. K through 5 were in one group, by far the biggest. 6 through 8 were in a second, and 9 through 12 in a third. I said goodbye to Matt and went into the third group. The high school group counted itself, and there were 31 of us. I recognized a few faces, but there was no one there I remember taking any classes with, let alone being friendly with. Our informal survey showed 16 freshmen, 7 sophomores,
4 juniors and 6 seniors. I guess we won't have to worry about class size, one of the seniors said, which of course turned out to be completely wrong. Eventually, they opened the doors and we went in. The younger kids were told to go to the cafeteria, the middle school kids to the gym, and the high school kids to the music room. When we got there, there weren't enough chairs for us. And what chairs there were mostly meant for 7-year-olds. So we sat on the floor and waited. And waited. And waited. Of course, I have no idea how long we waited, but it felt like forever. Eventually, Mrs. Sanchez walked in. I nearly wept. I was so happy to see a familiar face. Mrs. Sanchez smiled at us. "Welcome to Maple Hill High School," she said. "I'm pleased to see each and every one of you." A few kids laughed. "I know how difficult this is for you," Mrs. Sanchez said, "and I'd like to tell you things are going to get better, but of course I can't be sure that's true. All I can do is be honest with you and trust you to make whatever decisions are right for you." "There isn't going to be high school?" one of the younger kids asked. I couldn't tell whether that made him happy or sad. "As you can see, not many of the high school age students have come here," Mrs. Sanchez said. "We've heard that 44 9th through 12th graders are at the high school now. Obviously, many families have moved away, and I suppose quite a number have decided to homeschool this year." What we all knew but nobody was saying was that quite a number just didn't care about school anymore. And I guess some may have died. We certainly didn't say that. "So, we're it?" a kid asked. "We don't know that for sure," Mrs. Sanchez said. "Not every parent attended the meeting. We certainly hope more students will show up." "He should have offered free food," a girl said, and we all laughed. "How many high school teachers are here?" the senior girl asked. "How are we going to be divided up?" Mrs. Sanchez had that uncomfortable look I've come to associate with grown-ups. "That is a problem," she said. "There are 4 high school teachers at the high school. There's a chemistry teacher, a Spanish teacher, a math teacher, and a biology teacher. Here, we have an English teacher and me. I'm certified to teach history, although I haven't since I became principal." "Wow," the girl said. "Put all of you together, and you practically have a faculty." Mrs. Sanchez ignored her sarcasm. "Of course, it won't be school as any of us remember it, but we should be able to cobble some kind of curriculum together," she said. "But that will only work if we're all in the same building." "So we're not going to go to school here after all?" one of the younger kids asked. "We think it makes more sense to put all the high school students in the high school," Mrs. Sanchez said. "Of course, we'll be sharing the building with other students, but we'll have our own space. The idea is to teach 2 groups of 9th graders and have the sophomores, juniors, and seniors take classes together. We'll know better after we've done it for a while." I thought of the gang. Of the 2 guys with guns, my stomach clenched. "What if it isn't safe to get to the high school?" I asked. "I'd have to bike through town to get there, and I was told by an armed guard that girls shouldn't go any place without protection." I like Mrs. Sanchez, and I know it wasn't fair to put her on the spot like that. It wasn't even sensible. Not everybody has to go through town to get to the high school, and I had Matt to protect me. But I couldn't shake the image of those 2 guys with the guns. "We all have to decide for ourselves what's best," Mrs. Sanchez said. "There are no good answers to this situation. You do have the option of homeschooling. All you have to do is go to the office, tell someone there what courses you'd be taking, and your textbooks will be provided. That's the best we can do, I'm afraid." "This is crazy," one of the older boys said. "I've been working my butt off so I can go to a good college. That's all I've ever heard. Get into a good college. And now you're telling me there are maybe 6 teachers, and I don't even know what level they teach. Are any of them AP math? AP history? AP physics?" "What difference does it make?" another boy asked. "It isn't like there are any colleges left." "I know how unfair this all is," Mrs. Sanchez said, "but we'll try to do our best for you. And we'll support any decision you make. If you do decide to go to the high school, please stay here. Anyone else? Please go to the office and get your textbooks. I'll leave you now so you can discuss things freely among yourselves." Most of the kids continued sitting. A few left with Mrs. Sanchez. "How dangerous is town?" a girl asked me. "I don't know," I said. I heard there were guys with guns.
I heard there are girls missing, one of the younger girls said.
They could have just left town, I said. Lots of people are leaving.
Michelle Schmidt is missing, one of the girls said.
You're kidding, I said. Michelle was in my French class. She was walking home from church with her little sister, and some guy grabbed her, the girl said.
That's what I heard.
Three more kids got up and left the room.
I don't know why I didn't go with them. I knew I wasn't going to go to high school, but it felt good to be sitting there with kids my own age, at least pretending to go to school. I was with people, and not just Mom and Matt and Johnny and Mrs. Nesbitt. I wanted that feeling to last as long as it could, because high school had turned into Springfield, just another stupid dream.
You'd think somebody would do something, one of the older girls said. Call the police or the FBI, or something.
There aren't any more police, I said.
I don't think there's any FBI either, another girl said. My mother knows someone who knows someone in Washington, and he said the government isn't there anymore. The president and everybody went to Texas. Texas is supposed to have gas and electricity and plenty of food.
Maybe we should all move to Texas, I said. Another two or three kids got up and left.
So this is it? The senior boy asked. Are we all planning to go to the high school?
I guess so, one of the other boys said.
I have to ask my parents, a girl said. They didn't want me to go to the high school, but I don't think they're going to want me at home either.
Does anybody else ever wonder what the point is? A girl asked. Why are we pretending there's a future?
We all know there isn't.
We don't know that, another girl said. We don't know anything. I really think if we pray hard enough, God will protect us, one of the younger girls said.
Tell that to Michelle Schmidt, a boy said.
Suddenly I felt like I was surrounded by death, the way I feel when Peter gives us a new thing to worry about. I really didn't need to know kids were missing. So I got up. I felt if I was going to die anyway, I'd rather do it with my family around. I walked to the office, where I saw a woman looking very frazzled and not at all happy.
Are you going to be homeschooled? She asked. High school textbooks are over there.
I went to where she pointed. There were piles of textbooks scattered around in no order. I realized I should take textbooks for Johnny as well as myself. I started with his, because it made me feel like I was doing something positive and not just running away. Of course, I didn't know exactly what Johnny was planning to study. At first, I thought if I was stuck with French, he should be stuck with French. But then I decided he'd probably prefer Spanish. There are more Spanish-speaking baseball players. I took both. I took Earth Science and Biology textbooks, and 2 years' worth of math textbooks, and World and American History, and 4 different English textbooks, just for Johnny. I wouldn't have taken any textbooks home for myself, except I knew I'd never get away with that. So I selected a French 3 book, and math and chemistry, and an English textbook. I threw in an economics textbook and a psychology textbook, because at some point I'd thought maybe I'd take them. I piled the books up neatly and went back to the main office to see if I was supposed to sign for them or something. The frazzled-looking woman was gone. Then I did the strangest thing. I saw boxes of school supplies, pens and pencils and blue books and notepads, all just sitting there. I walked over making sure nobody could see me. I emptied my book bag and filled it with blue books and pads and pens and pencils. For all I know, I am the only person in the world keeping a journal of what's been going on. The journal books I've been given over the years are all full, and I've been using Mom's typing paper. I haven't asked her permission, and I'm not sure she'd give it to me if I did. At some point, she might want to start writing again. I can't remember the last time I was so excited. It felt like Christmas filling my book bag with supplies. Better than Christmas, though, because I knew I was stealing, and that made it even more exciting. For all I know, taking a blue book is a hanging offense, assuming there are any cops around to hang you. I kept wanting to take more. I ended up with another half dozen blue books tucked in under my belt. My clothes are too big for me anyway, so I figured the blue books would help me keep my pants on. I filled my pocketbook with pens and pencils. Then the frazzled woman came back in. I scurried away from the supply room and went back to my pile of textbooks. I'm going to need help carrying these books out, I said. I took from my brother and me.
What do you expect me to do about it? The woman snapped.
Actually, I didn't expect her to do anything.
I carried the books in 4 trips to the front door and waited until Matt showed up. We divvied the books between us and biked home. When we got there, I told Mom what had happened. She asked why I didn't want to go to the high school.